Parshas Bahaloscha, May 29th, 2007.
All right. Okay, let's start with Parshas Bahaloscha. It's on page 774 in your Chumashim. What I'd like to do this afternoon is go through the first three psukim. You'll notice in your Chumash that it's its own little paragraph, separate entity unto itself, these first three psukim. There are numerous questions which abound after learning these three psukim, and we'll tackle. I'd like to do at least two of them. If we have time, we'll touch on a third. But let's just learn them through first as it goes through. So, as you see in the little heading on your left-hand side, this is about the menorah. These three psukim are going to be Hashem's mitzvah, his requirement given to Aharon HaKohen regarding the lighting of the menorah. And the pasuk says as follows: Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. So Hashem is really speaking this through Moshe. It's the first thing that we see. I guess if we include this pasuk, we get four. So through Moshe, Hashem commands Aaron in the following ideas. Number one, Daber el Aharon va'amarto elav. Speak to Aharon, your brother, and say to him, V'ha'aloischo es haneros, as you kindle, or when you kindle the lamps, the lights of the menorah, el mul p'nei ha-menorah ya'iru shivas haneros. You should face the menorah with your seven lights. So that the commandment is not to light the menorah. That commandment we have already. That was given in Parshas Truma, back at the end of Sefer Shmos, the idea of building and lighting the menorah. So we have the tziva, the command to Aaron, when you light the menorah, the way in which you should light them is that the light should be directed towards the face of the menorah, towards the center. Rashi explains basically what this means was that the candelabra of the Mizbeach in Beis HaMikdash and of the Mishkan was not like the menorah that we have on Hanukkah. The Hanukkah menorah we have, we know, of course, is eight branches, four on each side, and the one in the middle is not really lit. We light it as a shamish, but it's not part of the lighting of the menorah. The real mitzvah is to light eight, which are four on one side, four on the other side. The menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was constructed a little bit differently. It was constructed with seven branches, one in the middle, which was lit, and then three on each side, for a total of seven. And that was the way that the menorah was lit in the Beis HaMikdash. There's actually a mitzvah, by the way, that one is not allowed to replicate that menorah. You're not allowed to make of any of the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash for alternate purposes. You can't make the shulchan, you can't make the table, you can't make a mizbeach, and you can't make a menorah, which is why it works out really well that we have an eight branch candelabra. Because you're not allowed to make one of seven. You'll notice mostly in shuls that have menorahs on the front, they don't make them out of seven, or they make some type of variance, because you're really not supposed to make a replica, except for the one you'll find in the front of our shul, which has seven branches, but it has eight candles.
Well, no, don't we have seven, but the middle one isn't?
Look in the front. The branches are seven, but there are eight candles on top. It's a funny thing. I asked Rabbi Feldman about that one. In any case, not to get sidetracked into that. So the seven candles, the seven branches which were lit in the Beis HaMikdash, so the Torah here is saying, how should you light them? The wicks should be all facing the center, so that your branch in the middle, the wick is in the middle, then your three on, what's for me, my right-hand side, all the wicks are pointed on the left-hand side of the cup, so that they're facing the center. Not in the middle, as you normally would put it, but you face them off to the left. And then on the right-hand side of the center, they would all be facing to the right, so that the six other candles, three on this side, three on that side, are all faced towards the center candle. That's what the Rashi explains, is the mitzvah here of El Mul Pinei HaMenorah. Towards the face of the menorah shall the seven lamps cast their light, that they should all be casting their light towards that center branch. So that's the first pasuk, that's the tzivoy, the commandment that Hashem gives to Moshe to tell over to Aaron, how you should light the menorah should be done in that fashion. Pasuk Gimel, Vayas Kein Aharon, and Aharon did as he was commanded. El Mul Pnei HaMenorah He'elo Neiroseha, and he kindled its lamps, as Hashem had commanded him, towards the face of the menorah, exactly as he had been commanded from Hashem through Moshe. And then the fourth pasuk says, "Vezeh ma'aseh ha'menorah miksha zahav." This is the workmanship of the menorah. Miksha zohav adirecha ad pircha mikshahi. That it should be hammered out, gold from its base to its flower, it is hammered out. Meaning that it is all one solid piece of gold, hammered out of that one solid piece of gold. All of the different designs, the bulbs and the flowers and the cups that were part of the design of the menorah were all hammered out of one solid piece of gold. Kasher hero Hashem es Moshe, kein asa es ha-menorah. According to the vision that Hashem showed Moshe, so did he make the menorah. So again, a funny phrase, according to the vision that Hashem showed Moshe. So apparently it's explicit here in the text that when Moshe constructed the menorah, there was some sort of vision that Hashem gave him of what it should look like. And based on that vision, Kain asa es ha-menorah, so did he make the menorah. So you have three psukim here. Again, a quick summary. First of the psukim is the command how you should light it, that the wick should all be facing the center branch. Second pasuk says, Aharon did as he was commanded, lighting the menorah with all of the wicks facing the center branch. And then the third pasuk here in our section says, and this is the way that the menorah should be constructed out of a solid piece of gold. It should be hammered out. According to the vision that Hashem showed Moshe how it should look, that is how he did it. Those are the psukim as the parsha opens up in a discussion about the menorah. There are a number of questions which need to be tackled and are addressed by the commentators on this section here of the Chumash. Anyone want to throw out any ideas, things that are bothering you? Yeah.
Seems backwards.
In what sense is it backwards? Yeah.
Well, this is how you'll make it.
Okay, fine, it should have been the other way around. This is how you should make it. Good. A valid question. The probable answer to that is that since this is a repetition of Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, where it was already, we were told how we were supposed to make it, the Gemara learns out a specific halacha from the fact that it was repeated here at all. In other words, if this were the first time that we addressed the menorah, that would be a very valid question. That would be backwards. Since we already know how we were supposed to make it, and we'll take a look at that pasuk later on, back in Parshas Truma, that probably would explain the Gemara. Says, why is this repeated at all? And it learns out a very specific halacha that it only needs to be a solid block when it's made out of gold. If you were to make the menorah out of gold, that's when it has to be hammered out of one solid block and you can't attach separate pieces. But if you were to make it out of wood or metal or other materials, which you are allowed to do, then that halacha wouldn't apply. You could actually piece it together from other things. That's what the Gemara learns out. But otherwise, it would be a very valid question. Yeah?
Well, I thought it says that Bezalel made it.
Okay. So that's going to be a question we're going to address. Meretz Hashem, who made the menorah? So from the lashon of the pasuk, it would sound like Moshe actually made it. The lashon of the pasuk says, "Kasher kamareh asher hero Hashem es Moshe." According to the vision that Hashem showed Moshe, "Kain asa es ha-menorah." So he made it. Now, if you look in the art scroll, is he capitalized or lowercase?
Lowercase.
The art scroll translates it with the lowercase. So "Kain asa es ha-menorah." They're translating it as it's a reference to Moshe. Now we'll see that that'll be valid, that'll be an approach, we'll have to see about that, but this will be a discussion, how we read this pasuk, who in fact made this, was it Bezalel, was it Moshe, and we'll see the Midrash, and we're going to point out that it seems that Hashem made it himself even, as we'll see in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Okay, some other questions. Yeah.
It looks like it says like three times, so he did it, and like he should light it facing towards the
menorah. Good, a stress of this idea of the lighting. Good. Okay, that'll be one of the ones we'll get to if we have time, I hope, at the end. So the basic questions that I want to tackle, number one, which is a question that I really would have been unfair to ask because we're not looking at this in context, but if we were to look at this in context, there's a funny placement of this law here. This entire idea of the menorah is in a funny place. We discussed the menorah back at the end of Sefer Shmos. That's where Moshe and Aaron were given the command to build it. Where we're up to right now in the story is the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Mishkan. All of the Nesim, all of the leaders of the tribes at the end of last week's parsha, if you remember the repetition over and over and over again, each one of the tribal leaders brought their sacrifices to inaugurate the Mishkan. And immediately following that, we have this little section of four psukim describing the menorah. And then we go back into the, if you look on the left-hand side, the consecration of the Levites. We go into what was necessary to get the Levian ready for the service of the Beis HaMikdash, which would have flowed, just take out this whole parsha of the menorah, that doesn't fit here. You go through, we're in a dedication process. So the Nesim, the leaders, brought all of their karbanos, their sacrifices to dedicate, consecrate the Mishkan. Then we go through the process of getting the Levium ready and sanctifying them for their service in the Mishkan. And then we can continue with the rest of the Pesach Sheni, which the Torah is going to describe, and other areas of the Mishkan. This one area of the menorah is odd and out of place. We don't discuss anything else of what was done in the Mishkan. We don't discuss what we used the Shulchan for. We don't discuss what we used the Mizbeach for. We didn't discuss the different types of Mizbeach. Nothing else is discussed in this point other than the kindling of the lights of the menorah. So Chazal already were bothered by its placement. That will be question number one, which we will tackle. We also have to address this issue of what's the idea of the way that the content, no, the context of the parsha is odd. Why are we discussing the menorah here? The content of the parsha is odd. What is this idea of lighting the wicks all facing the middle? What's the meaning or significance of that? That we have a specific tzivui, a specific command to Aharon to light it that way, and a stress of, and Aharon did it that way. As if there's some special meaning in that, that not only do we command him to do it, of course he did. I mean, Aharon did everything that he was told to do. But here we have a specific stress on the fact that that he did it. And then the last question, which was already addressed, was who exactly made this menorah? The pasuk itself is a little bit unclear exactly where it came from. Those are some issues we'll tackle. The main two that I want to tackle, let's start with the context of this parsha. Why is this here? Why do we have, in the middle of the discussion of the consecration of the Mishkan, do we have this discussion of the lighting of the menorah and the way that it's done? So the place to start with that, of course, is Rashi. So Rashi mentions the following idea. There's a very first Rashi on your page. If you want to read it inside, I will read in transit as we go along. Rashi opens with a question. Loma nismucha parshas ha-menorah le-parshas ha-nesim. Why is this parsha, the idea, this topic of the lighting of the menorah, right next to the 12 sacrifices brought by the leaders of the 12 tribes at the end of the previous week's parsha? So that if we weren't to break it up week by week as we do, we would just be reading the Chumash straight. We would have gone directly from 12 repetitious segments, each one of the tribal leaders bringing their sacrifice, same one over and over and over again, and right from that we go into Aharon's command to light the menorah. So the sages were bothered, what's the connection, why is this here? Says Rashi, l'fi kishiroa Aharon chanukos hanesiim cholsho daito. When Aharon saw the leaders bringing their sacrifices, which was for the express written purpose of consecrating the Mishkan, we are going to bring these sacrifices to dedicate the Mishkan, and it's now going to be used in the service of Hashem. So Aharon saw they were all bringing it, and his mind was weakened. He was distraught. He was upset at the fact that he had no part in this. Shelo hoya imahem b'chanukah. He wasn't part of that. The 12 tribes did not come from the tribe of Levi. They came from Ephraim and Manasseh. We've discussed many times. There's always 12. Sometimes Ephraim and Manasseh are combined into one, that of Yosef. And sometimes they're made into two. But whenever they're made into two, who's left out? It's always Levi who's left out. So last week it was Ephraim and Manasseh separate. Levi didn't have a part. The leader of the tribe of Levi did not come with this series of sacrifices. Well, who v'lo shivto? Not Aharon as the leader, not his entire shevet. So he was distraught that the tribe of Levi didn't have a part in the inaugural sacrifice of the Mishkan. Omar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem said to him, Chayecha shalcha gedoyla mishalahem. Do not fear, Aharon, do not be distraught. Yours will be greater than theirs. You're upset that they all had the sacrifices, all the leaders had a chance to bring something. You will have a chelek, you will have something, a piece of this, which is even greater than theirs. She'ato madlik umeitiv es haneros. You will light and prepare the candles for the menorah. And that, the sages say, is why this parsha is inserted right here. Why does this parsha of the tzivui, the command for Aharon to light the menorah, follow immediately after the 12 leaders brought their sacrifices? This, says Chazal, is quoted here in Rashi. This is the response that Hashem gave to Aharon, when he saw that Aharon was distressed and distraught over not having a piece of the inaugural service So he says, you know what? You light the candles, and so I'll tell you exactly how I want you to light it. But why is it here? Not the content. We're not getting into why was it specifically in that way, but the context. Why is this here? This was said to appease Aharon, who was distraught over the fact that he and his tribe did not have a part in the inaugural sacrifice of the Mishkan. That's Rashi's response. So far, so good?
Really?
No, yeah.
Why would Aharon, he would be, like, so sad? Because he gave up his righteousness at the time of the Egel, and, I mean, and now that he's like, I mean, I didn't get to, like, bring inauguration, why would he be sad over here?
Okay, well, whatever level he's at, he still felt sad that he was missing something. There was something going on. The 12 tribal leaders were involved in this inaugural service, and he wanted a part in it, and he was left out, so he felt bad. So no matter how much other accomplishments he had, there was still a piece of him which was upset and felt left out, that there was something that he could have been doing more and he wasn't. And he was distraught about that. So as a response to that, Rashi here says, Hashem gave him the mitzvah of lighting the menorah and taught it to him right here. Yours will be greater than theirs, is the language that Rashi used. Shalcha gedoyla mishalahem. Yours is greater than theirs. You have the menorah. And this will serve as an appeasement for his distress over not being part of the sacrifice. Well, guess who has a problem with this, Rashi?
Oh,
Ramban, of course. Why are we sitting here? We're learning Ramban. So Ramban has a big problem with this Rashi. He actually has two major problems with this Rashi. His first problem is as follows. He says, I don't understand, says Ramban. The Aharon and the Kohanim, whom he represented, had many, many things already which were unique to them, and the other tribes had no part in. So in his language, why was he appeased? Why did he get consolation from the fact that he got the menorah? What about the fact that he brought the ketores, bokar, erev, boker v'erev? He brought the sacrifices, the daily offerings, in the morning and at night. Nobody else brought that. He brought all the karbanos. He brought the minchas. He brought the flower offerings. On Yom Kippur, who was the only person who was able to enter into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the Holy of Holies, to offer the sacrifices of Yom Kippur? Oh, right. That was only the Kohen Gadol, Aharon HaKohen, from the priestly family. Nobody else was able to do that. He was Kodesh Hashem, the Holy to Hashem, Omeid Beheichol, who would always be standing in the courtyard of Hashem, Lesharso Ulevorech Bishmo, to serve God and to bless the people in God's name. Who was the only people who did that? That was the priestly nation led by Aharon HaKohen. Says the Ramban, so you gave him the menorah? Aharon here is distraught. He didn't have a chance to take part in something. So, all right. Well, you do lots of things that only you can do. So why was the menorah chosen, says the Ramban, if it's to appease Aharon that he was left out of the inaugural service? I don't understand why it'd be the menorah more than anything else. There are many, many things that only Aharon would be able to do. He doesn't therefore like this interpretation that the menorah is placed here to serve as an appeasement for Aharon. Why should this be more of an appeasement than any of the other things that are specific only to Aharon HaKohen? Question number two, he says, is that Aharon did bring many karbanos during the week leading up to the inauguration of the Mishkan. The Nesiim, the leaders, they had their specific offerings which they brought as tribal leaders. But Aharon himself had many, many more korbanos which he brought daily in the 8 days leading up to the inauguration of the Mishkan. So says the Ramban, he was part of it. Why would you say that he wasn't part of this, when in fact he did have a place in it? He in fact did bring many karbanos, and why are you appeasing him with the menorah when there are many other things that he could be appeased with? So says the Ramban, I don't understand what the problem was, and I don't understand how this would in any way appease him when there were so many other things which he was unique in anyway. So he says, I'll tell you what you're going to suggest to me. You're going to suggest to me that he was commanded to bring his karbanos. That was part of what he was told to do. All of the sacrifices that Aharon brought in the 8 days leading up to the dedication of the Mishkan were commanded to be done. But the tribal leaders, they came on their own. They said, we want to be part of this dedication process. And they initiated this process of bringing the karbanos. And that's what Aharon was distraught over. That he wasn't part of the initiation, the ability of the Jewish people to say, we want to do something on our own that we were not commanded in. And that's what he was distraught over. That's a nice suggestion. Because there's always something special about being able to initiate a process, being the one to say on our own, not because you commanded me to do it, but because I want to do it. So says the Ramban, maybe you'll tell me that's what really was getting him all distraught. However, says the Ramban, that's not going to work. Because if his problem was that he wasn't able to do something on his own, you can't appease him by commanding him to light the menorah. That's not going to help the problem. So if that is really what was bothering him, that he wasn't able to do this on his own, so then it doesn't really work that he should be appeased by being given the commandment to light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, because that's just more of a command. And he already was commanded to bring all the sacrifices, and that apparently didn't help.
Didn't he lose his two sons, though, for initiating something they wanted to do?
Right. They initiated in an inappropriate fashion, yes. You would think that he'd be pretty weary of that. That's an excellent point. Okay, so the Ramban is left with the question of, why then is this here? And how did it appease it? Chazal, he has to deal with Chazal. The sages already said that this was an appeasement of something. So what is this in an appeasement of? The Ramban doesn't fully understand the Rashi, what Aaron felt bad about, what was he missing, and how did this help him? So the Ramban suggests as follows. Aval inyan ha-hagodah hazo, this statement from Chazal, that this was to appease Aharon, in which Hashem says to him, Aharon, don't worry about the Nesim, the leaders who brought their karbanos. Yours is going to be greater than theirs. Do you know what this is a hint to, says the Ramban? Remez, it's al Chanukah shel Neros shehayso bevayis sheni. This was a remez, not to the candles that Aharon is going to be lighting now, nor to the candles that the Jewish people were going to light in the Beis HaMikdash when Shlomo HaMelech finished the construction. The candles that Hashem is commanding Aharon to light now are a hint to something which will happen 1,000 years later, during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Al Yidei Aharon Uvanov, through the hands of the Kohanim, which famous candles were lit by the priests in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash? The Hanukkah candles. Ritzoni Loma, what I mean to say, Chashmonoi Kohen Gadol Uvanov. The Chashmonoi, Yochanan ben, totally blanking. Ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chashmonoi Uvanov, who lit the Hanukkah candles at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. This commandment that Aaron is getting now is a hint towards that. That Hashem is saying to Aaron, you're distressed and distraught that you didn't have a part in this dedication of the Beis HaMikdash? Don't worry. You will have a hand in another dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, and that dedication will be even greater than this dedication. So that, yes, you had no part in this dedication, but you, as the high priest, your descendants and the Kohanim will have a part in the lighting of the candles, which will signify a rededication of the Beis HaMikdash 1,000 years from now, which will be even greater than this. In what way is it greater? What does God mean to say to Aaron that your hand in the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash through the lighting of the candles will be even greater? So the Ramban goes on to quote from two different sources, two different ways in which the dedication of Aharon's candles during the Hanukkah story will be even greater than the dedication of the karbanos that were offered right now. Number one, he says, from the Medrash, Yesh Chanukah Acheres, Sheyesh Bo Hadlakas Haneres, will be another dedication which will have a lighting of candles. Va'ani Ose Bo Yisrael Al Yedei Banecha, I will do it for the Jewish people through your sons Aharon, the Nisim Uteshua, with great miracles and salvation, the Chanukah Shekruya Al Shemam, and will be called Chanukah through their name. So that right now there was no miraculous events through this part of the dedication process. The Jewish people were in the desert, they had constructed the Mishkan, they were going to consecrate it and inaugurate it with a service. And Aaron said, but I don't have a part in that service. So Hashem says, don't worry. You're going to have a part in a dedication service years later, which is going to be much greater. It's going to be through great fanfare, through great miraculous events, in which a minority of the Jewish people will defeat a much larger and stronger army. And through great miracles, they'll find oil, and they'll relight the candles, rededicating the Beis HaMikdash, and you will be part in that through the priestly family, and that will be in a much greater way through that miraculous event than the dedication process which is taking place now. That's idea number one, that he says that it'll be through miraculous events. Number two, says the Ramban, a wonderful, amazing thing. He says that you need to know that the brachos that I'm giving you through your children will never be nullified. They will always apply. Meaning, says the Ramban, it is well known that the sacrifices which the Nisim brought, the concept of bringing a karbon, only lasts as long as the Beis HaMikdash stands. When the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so then the karbonos go with them. We don't have any sacrifices today. Until we rebuild the temple, there are no sacrifices. So says Hashem to Aaron, the part in the dedication that you missed is in a way temporary. It only will exist as long as the Beis HaMikdash will exist. But I'm giving you a hand in a part of the dedication process, the lighting of the menorah, which is going to be forever. Because through your sons, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and Matis Yohu, and the Chashmonoim, who are going to rededicate the Beis HaMikdash through the Hanukkah lights, Haneros will never be mevatel. The candles will never be nullified. Lo Ramzu Elu Laneros Chanukas Chashmonoi. The hint that Hashem is giving to Aaron is to the Hanukkah candles of the Chashmonoim, Shehi Noheges Afla Achar Chorban Begoloseinu, which will be applicable even after the destruction, even in our exile. What does it mean that yours will be greater than theirs? Why is Aharon appeased through the lighting of the candles? Because the lighting of the candles signifies so much more than just the lighting of the candles in the actual Beis HaMikdash. The lighting of the candle signifies a hint towards the Hanukkah story. The lighting of the candles that the Jewish people will then do not just in the Beis HaMikdash when they rededicate the second Beis HaMikdash through great fanfare and miraculous events, but it's a hint to the candles which are lit until today in 2007 in Atlanta, Georgia. The Jewish people are always lighting the Hanukkah candles. And there's a hint that that's always going to remind us of the miraculous events of the rededication during the second Beis HaMikdash, when Aharon followed through his sons, the Chashmonoim, the high priest and the priestly family, rededicated that Beis HaMikdash with the lighting of the candles. So Hashem is appeasing Aharon, you had no part in this dedication, you feel bad that you have no part in this dedication, go light the menorah. Why is the lighting of the menorah so special? Doesn't he do many things which are unique to the Kohanim? Doesn't he do many things which are unique to the high priest? No, says the Ramban. You know why this appeased Aharon? Because this was part of the dedication of a Beis HaMikdash. Not today, but a part of a dedication to a Beis HaMikdash, which would happen years later when the Jewish people needed to rededicate the second Beis HaMikdash. And it's even greater than what the Nisim are doing now, because this element of lighting the candles is forever. The Jewish people will always be lighting our Hanukkah candles, even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah?
Question. On one hand, the lighting of the Hanukkah menorah that we have today, you would think by the logic here, it would be done only by Kohanim today, because that was through Aharon, and that's his gift, and the Maccabees, the Chashmonim, were all Kohanim. So somehow that we, as mixtures of whatever remains of all the tribes, especially if we're Israel, or, you know, are lighting menorahs. I think that's very interesting, how that happened. And then number two, since we don't have karbanot, it seems like we're all doing the same karban in a certain way nowadays. Since we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, we're all lighting menorahs, even as though we're not kohanim. And that's interesting. I wonder if there's a relationship between that, you know, all the karbanot and the menorah, and then if the karbanot are gone, and we're all kind of through Aharon doing it all.
It is interesting. It is an interesting thing, but that's somehow the appeasement to Aharon. So again, so according to the Ramban, why is this parsha here? Why are these four verses inserted here about the lighting of the menorah? But this was an appeasement to Aharon, who felt bad about being left out of the dedication service of the 12 tribes. And Hashem was giving him the kindling of the menorah lights, which was not a hint towards the actual menorah that he was lighting right then and there, because the Ramban says, why is it any different than many of the things that he does? That doesn't serve as any appeasement when he does so many things which are unique to him. But the reason why this would appease Aharon in having been left out of the dedication of the Mishkan is because it's a hint to the dedication process that he will be part of in the lighting of the Hanukkah candles 1,000 years later during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, which was, as the Medrash says, even greater than the Karbanos which are being brought now. Why are they so much greater? Because that dedication will take place amidst great miraculous events, and it will not even end with the destruction of that Beis HaMikdash, but it will continue eternally through the Jewish people's lighting their own Hanukkah candles, will always recall that dedication process of the Kohanim when they went back into the Beis HaMikdash after defeating the Greeks and relit the Hanukkah candles. And this was the hint being given to Aharon now, 1,000 years earlier. Don't worry, Aharon, you will have a part in the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash. It will happen many years down the road, but your part will be even greater than the part of the Nesiim today, offering their sacrifices, and in that, says the Ramban, Aharon was appeased.
All that being true, it seems a little, it's kind of interesting that we don't recall Aharon when we talk about Hanukkah and we light the candles. We make no reference at all.
Okay, not to Aharon himself, but there are many references to the fact that it was the Kohanim and the high priest who was responsible, and that really is what
any of us are making that connection.
Well, this coming year, Meretz Hashem, you will.
Right. It does seem like maybe somewhere the Ramban might have this idea that it's greater to do when one is commanded than one, so that also would have been, it was better that he was commanded rather than...
Right, but he's addressing just why would it... It is often better because, you know, the Gemara itself says it's better to do something when one is commanded to than when one is not commanded to. But if, that was just a suggestion that the Ramban himself rejects. If you were to tell me that his distress was over not being able to do something on his own, then lighting the menorah wouldn't help. That was just how he had brought that up. Okay, but we're left with the problem for Rashi. As usually is our structure of what we have over here. Rashi says, how was Aharon appeased? With the kindling of this menorah in front of him right here and now. It was on that that the Ramban said, well, that's impossible, because why would that appease him? He's got thousands of things that he does which are unique to him. So why would it be the menorah? Which is why the Ramban comes onto this idea that really what the menorah is symbolizing is not anything in the here and now. It's really symbolizing something which will take place 1,000 years from now, the rededication of the second Beis HaMikdash. That's the comfort for Aharon. But Rashi didn't learn that way. Rashi understood that the comfort for Aharon was, here Aharon, I see you're upset that you weren't able to take part in the sacrifices inaugurating the Mishkan. Here, go light the menorah. And Rashi leaves it at that. Go light the menorah right here and now, and somehow that should serve as an appeasement. So we should be left with, for Rashi, the questions that the Ramban asked, why should the menorah be different than any of the other things that the Jewish people did, that the priests did? Why should this specifically serve as some sort of comfort or appeasement for his distress over not taking part? To answer that, I want to share with you an idea that Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, who was the great Rosh Yeshiva in the Mir Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim, I guess maybe 40, 50 years ago, about 30 years ago, in answering this question. And he develops the following idea, which is based on a medrash, which I'll read for you, in which he's trying to establish there is a unique element of the menorah. There is something special. Clearly, Rashi understands that if Aharon was a little bit distressed, and God gives him the menorah, and he doesn't give him, oh, by the way, don't you remember on Yom Kippur, you're going to be the one going into the Holy of Holies? He didn't tell him that. He didn't tell him every day, you'll be the one bringing the sacrifices in the morning and at night. He didn't tell him, you'll be the one who bestows the priestly blessings upon the people every day. He told him, you're going to light the menorah. So there must be something unique and special about this menorah which would serve as that ability to appease Aharon. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz as follows. The Medrash writes that the Jewish people were troubled by this concept of lighting the menorah. And they said, why would we do that? Why does a person normally light a candelabra? For light. So the Jewish people said, you can't possibly want us to light this candle for light, right? You don't need light. You are Oro Shel Olam. You, God, are the light of the world. Your home doesn't need an electrician. It can't be that your Mishkan, your tabernacle, and your Beis HaMikdash should need light. Why are you asking us to light a menorah. And the Medrash says as follows. I want to read these because it's just such a beautiful idea. Amru Yisrael lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Jewish people said before Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the World, Ata Omer Sheneir Lefanecha, you're telling us to light a candle before you. Ata Hu Oro Shel Olam, you are the light of the whole world. What are you asking us to light a candle? Amr Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem responded, Lo She'ani Tzaruch Lachem, it's not because I need you or I need your light. Ela She'ta'iru Li K'derech She'ha'arti Lachem, I want you to light the way for me in the way that I lit the way for you while we traveled through the desert. As you know, when the Jewish people went through the desert, so at night there was a pillar of fire which led their way, and during the day there was a pillar of cloud which led their way. Says Hashem, I want you to light in my house a candle for me, the way I lit the road for you while we were traveling through the desert. Why would God want us to light for him the way that he lit for us? La'alos eschem b'fnei ha'umos, to raise you up in front of all the other nations of the world, to give you a stature and a place that you have different from everybody else. Shehayu omrim, that all the nations of the world should say, Re'u, look, Eich Yisrael me'irim, look at how the Jewish people are lighting the way, L'mishuhu me'ir l'chol ha'olam, look at how they give light for he who gives light to the whole world. Says Chazal, I'll give you a mashal. I'll explain to you in a parable what this would be like. L'pikeach v'suma. In many instances, Chazal uses imagery of a blind person walking together with a healthy person who has his eyesight. Hayim ha'alchum, that they're walking together in the way. The blind person obviously being led by he who is able to see. Amar lo pikeach v'suma. So the healthy individual, he who had his eyesight, says to his blind companion, Kishenichnas l'toch habayis. When we get to the house, say the hidlik esaner hazeh v'heilu. Can you go turn the lights on for me, please? Armalei hasuma. So the blind person looks at him and says, I don't understand. Kishayisi v'derech ato hayisi misacheni. When we're walking on the way, you're holding on to me, guiding me the whole way. I can't see. You're the one showing me how to go. Until we got to the house, you accompanied me the whole way. And now you're telling me that I shall light a candle for you. I can't see anything. You've shown me everything. I shall light the candle for you. You shouldn't be indebted to me that I took you this entire way in the desert, or on the way, that you couldn't see. You owe me everything. In order that you shouldn't be indebted to me, why don't you light the candle for me when we get to the house? That you will be providing me the light, which I, of course, could have done on my own. I could even do it better than you. But why don't you do it? So that you will in some way be able to give back to me, and you shouldn't be entirely indebted to me for what I did for you. Lekach amarti hei, kach hapikeach zeh Baruch Hashem is the one who knows how to see. And the Suma, that's us, the Jewish people. And the Medrash continues, and that's why Hashem said, light the candles to me. The idea of lighting the candles, Hashem doesn't need our lights. He could see plenty well without our lights. Doesn't need it. What is symbolized by the Jewish people lighting the candles in the of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash? The symbol in that is, as the Medrash says, is the Pikeach, the one who is able to see, saying to the one whom he has brought the whole way there, why don't you light for me the candle so that you shouldn't be entirely indebted to me for all that I've done to you? Hashem has just brought the Jewish people through the Midbar for 40 years, as he brings them by day, by night, showing them the way, telling them exactly what to do. And as in the Mishkan already, while they're in the desert, and then in the Beis HaMikdash, which they will build when they get to the land of Israel, Hashem says, light for me a candle. I want this to be a way in which you can show some level of Hakaras HaTov back to me. I'm providing you with an opportunity to say, oh, you know what? It's as if I'm going to be lighting the way for Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. Doesn't need my light, that's for sure. But through this act is symbolic of the Jewish people's attempt to show some Hakaras HaTov, some sort of appreciation for all that Hashem had done for them while going through the Midbar. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, do you want to know why this was an appeasement to Aharon HaKohen? here is the Jewish people, all the tribal leaders, the 12 of them, one after another, one day after another, bringing their sacrifices, initiating their attempt to say, God, we want to have a part in your Mishkan. We want to have a part in your tabernacle. We want to bring the service to inaugurate it, to consecrate it for holy use. And Aaron says, I have no part in this. My tribe, myself as its leader, was not part of this practice, this 12-day series of the tribal leaders bringing their sacrifice. And I want to have a part in it. Says Reb Chaim Shmulev is explaining Rashi, so Hashem says to him, but you have the menorah. Why don't you go light for me the menorah? Not the on Yom Kippur going into Lufnayv Lufnim Tosik Atoma, that's a separate issue. Not bringing the sacrifices and not giving the priestly blessings. I want you to light the menorah. What is it about the menorah? What is it specific to the menorah that Hashem says to Aaron, this is what I want you to light, says Reb Chaim, because this is all about being representative of the Jewish people's attempt at giving some form of Hakaras HaTov. Hashem's allowing us to do something for him in his home, like the man who can see, saying to the blind man, go flip the light on for me, please. They're over there on your right-hand side. Why would I? You could do, you know where they are. I want you to do something for me. Why don't you be the one to provide the light for me in my house? Instead of, after all this way that I've been doing it for you on the way, why don't you have an opportunity to do something back for me? And the menorah represents the Jewish people's attempt at lighting the way for the light of the world. He who does not need our lights, but to say, we'll provide the light of your house. We'll provide the light in the Beis HaMikdash in some form of showing our appreciation for all that you did for us. That has a very special place in the service of the Mishkan. More special than anything else, so that Rashi understands this was the comfort that Aharon had for not being part of the inaugural service, that he went to go light the menorah. That's how Reb Chaim Shmulevitz learns the context of these four psukim, why they are here as opposed to anywhere else. Those are the two ideas as far as question number one goes. Why is this here? What is the idea of this mitzvah of lighting the menorah inserted right here in the middle of the story of the inauguration of the Mishkan, whereas none of the other services were stated over here? So the Ramban said, let's start with what the sages say. The sages say it was to appease Aharon. Aharon was distressed that he had no part in the inauguration service. He wasn't part of it. All the other tribes had a leader who brought sacrifices, and he wasn't part of it. So Hashem says, okay, you'll light the menorah. So the Ramban says what it was a reference to was the menorah of the Hanukkah story, because that was also a dedication of the Beis HaMikdash. It was a rededication of the second Beis HaMikdash done through the priests and the high priests as they rededicated the Beis HaMikdash through great fanfare, through great miraculous events, and it would remain forever. We would continue to light the menorah even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Ramban says the reason why Aaron was commanded now to light the menorah was to comfort him that he would have a part in the lighting of the menorah for years to come, which would be part of a rededication of the Beis HaMikdash. And even though, Aharon, you weren't part of this dedication, you will be part of a future dedication which will be even greater than this current dedication. That's how the Ramban understands. Rashi, as understood by Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, learns that the appeasement is in of itself the lighting of the menorah, that this was a special element of the service in the Beis HaMikdash. More than the other avodas which were done, the menorah signified the Jewish people's attempt at being makir tov, of appreciating the good that Hashem had done for them and lighting the way for them throughout their sojourn in the desert. And this was the Jewish people's attempt to say, well, we'll light your house for you. And that, to be part of that, was a comfort to Aaron that he should have a piece of that. That is how Rashi and Ramban understand the placement, the context of these few psukim here in the beginning of this week's parsha. Let me throw in at the end, what about the content? Just an idea. What is this idea of the way that it was lit? It's a funny way that we light the menorah. So how does Hashem tell Aaron to light the menorah? Not in a normal fashion, but that all the wicks should be centered towards the middle. Why should that be? So again, here you have Rashi addresses this problem, and he says an interesting thing. He leaves us hanging almost, I would suggest. Rashi says, what was the point of lighting in this way? So Rashi says, it's interesting when you read this Rashi coming off of what we just learned, specifically in order that nobody should say that Hashem needs the light, because if you need lights, So you don't gear all the light towards the center. What you do is you spread them out so that it should give off as much light as possible to the rest of the room. So Rashi says, why did Hashem command Aaron to light the wick specifically all focused towards the middle? It was in order that everybody should know that this was not for the purpose of light. God doesn't need light. This is for some other reason. He doesn't explain what that reason is. He just says that people shouldn't say, God needs light. So it was done in an odd way, which would serve as that reminder. Very similar to the way that when we light our Hanukkah candles, there are a lot of halachas which are not really applicable to us today because we don't have candles, but were very applicable during a time 100 years ago before electricity. The candles for Hanukkah had to be placed in specific areas which were not normally lit. So it shouldn't be that someone would say, oh, that's not Hanukkah, that's just because they wanted to have candles at night, which people normally did. So you had to specifically light them in areas and in ways that were not normally done. So similar to that, Rashi says the reason why the wicks were all centered in the middle is that nobody should say, God needs light. That's not the purpose of the lighting of the menorah. What is the purpose? So there Rashi doesn't say here. We have an explanation ready from Reb Chaim Shulevitz. It's really our ability to give Hakaras HaTov, but that doesn't explain why the wicks were all focused towards the middle. I just want to share with you a Svarno. The Svarno, one of the classic commentaries on Chumash, writes an explanation why the lights were centered towards the middle. And he explains that the three branches to the right of the center represent those who are involved in holy matters, in the study of Torah, the support of Torah, the learning of Torah. I shouldn't say the support, but they were, all of that issue are represented by the three candles, the branches to the right. The three branches to the left represent those who are involved in more what we would assume to be more mundane activities, but were done for the support of Torah. They're maybe working in the whatever they're doing. They're not involved in the actual study of Torah or the keeping of the mitzvahs during their working day, but they're involved in the more temporal or mundane activities, says the Sforno, but they're all directed towards the center branch representing Hashem himself and spiritual pursuits and the purpose of our creation as Jews being here in this world. And so then no matter what element that a person has, whether or not he's involved in the actual study of Torah or he's involved in the support of Torah through his business ventures, regardless, everything, all the wicks are focused towards the center, all flames are aimed towards the middle, where towards the that center candelabra, toward the spiritual pursuits and fulfillment of our mission here in this world. That's how he explains the content, why it is that the commandment was to light him in that way. That's the idea is expressed by the Sforno.
I still never understand, though, the flames directed toward the center. If they were flashlights, I could see how they would be directed toward the center, but flames go up no matter...
Just that the wick was bent off to the side.
Yeah,
in other words, as opposed to being straight up in the middle, you're right, the flame would go up, but it would be go up off to the right. I wonder if there's, I can't remember if there's a picture of that.
Well, the picture in here.
Do they have a picture of
that? Has it going up?
Well, the flames are always going to be going up, but the wicks.
451.
So the wicks are all leaning off to the side.
Page 451, and even there, they don't seem to be.
Yeah, they didn't draw a picture of that. And what you would have would be the wicks would be leaning off on the three branches off to the right, off to the left-hand side of the wick, of the cup. I'll try not to get a picture, but that's what it would look like within the cup. The wick would be off to the side. That was a special command to do it that way.
If you ever do come across a picture,
I've seen one. I'll try to find it. Yeah.
I learned that Rebbe Schneerson, the Chabad Rebbe, had the concept that the menorah looked like you see the way Chabad does it. And it just occurred to me as you were saying that since flames obviously go up, that because the way the Chabad menorah shaped, going this way, that was how everything went towards the middle, as opposed to our menorahs, which are curved in a line like this. So maybe that was, I think that's the Rebbe's picture of what the menorah was like.
Very possible.
That,
I'm not familiar with that, but I can hear that.
Rabbi, do you have time to talk about the Tzal?
I have time to quickly mention a Rashi. Rashi learns, you want to look at it inside. I flipped pages here, I'm sorry.
770.
Rashi reads on the second column in Rashi, the last Rashi in before Pasuk Vav, so it's five wide lines down. Mm-hmm. Two, three, four, five. The beginning of that line, Asas HaMenorah, Mi Sha'asa, whoever made it. So he made the menorah. Who's the he referring to? The one who did it. Who is? Bezalel, ostensibly. He's the one who made it. Medrash Agada, and the Medrash says, Al Yedei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Na'asis Me'eleha. The Medrash says that it was really done through Hashem, that it was made on its own. That's a Medrash which is also based on the Pasuk in Truma. That doesn't say, it says, the way that the Pasuk says, expresses the idea of the menorah being made, is that the sages understood from there that it was made on its own, that Moshe threw the black gold into a fire, and it came out in the way that it needed to be done. There was a whole discussion, maybe, I guess, either next year, Truma, or next year, Bahalos, so I'll have to talk about that. There's a whole maral about it, because there seems to be conflicting reports whether or not Moshe, as the Torah says, Hashem showed Moshe a vision of it. So why did it need to be shown if he couldn't make it? He started it, he couldn't do it. There's a whole discussion about that, that he seems like he started it, wasn't able to do it, then Hashem did it on his own. It's a discussion. But at the end of the day, the final product seems to have been done by Hashem himself. That seems to be pretty clear from the sages. It warrants a greater discussion than when we have time for it today. Okay. A wonderful afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Well,